Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. This week, I interview Dr. Jason L. Miller, who is the Center Director for the Counseling and Human Development Center at Kent State University. Dr. Miller will share with us some of the issues he faces directing a public counseling center on a university campus. It's my pleasure today to have with me Dr. Jason L. Miller of Kent State University, who is the clinic director, the center director for the Counseling and Human Development Services Center. Jason, thanks for joining us. You're going to talk to us a little bit about how it is to be a university center director.
Yeah, it's a challenging role at times, quite a bit different from teaching. I taught for a while at Mississippi State before coming here, and moving from the classroom to the clinic, I wasn't sure how much I would like it, but once I got into the clinic and really comfortable with everything, it's a fun and exciting role.
So why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners, maybe say a little bit about your background, degree, and current occupation.
Okay. As you said, Dr. Jason Miller, I received my PhD from the University of New Orleans, and I'm a national certified counselor. I'm currently working towards licensure in the state of Ohio. Ohio's a little bit different than most states, so I'm still working in that area. My background, it's basically been counselor education all the way. Undergraduate in psych, master's in community counseling, and doctorate in counselor education, as I said, from UNO. And I taught for a little bit at Mississippi State for a year, some psychology and some counseling classes, and then moved up here. And
okay.
Been here ever since.
As center director, what does your role entail? What sort of things do you do?
There's a lot that the role really entails as center director. It's I think some people look at center directors and they think, well, it's just a matter of making sure the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. But it's the role really entails everything from balancing client care, managing client care, all the way down to enhancing the academic performance of the students, the learning opportunities that the students have that are running the center. Our center is run by practicum students, so I'm trying to balance that educational component with a client care component, and sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's not, but that's the biggest, I think, task that as director I have to do. And then there's all the little things, the managing files, mm-hmm. making sure that the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, on all the other little things. But the biggest thing is really just dealing with students and clients.
You know, I remember my experience of working in a agency and a clinic, a center in an agency, and I think your role probably entitles not only having to make sure that you have quality client care, but also there's this educational component that goes into, that's directly a part of working in a university center. When I worked in an agency, we were all concerned about client care, but I'm not sure there was that strong of an emphasis on an educational role.
Yeah, because I think we do have some limitations in the center, and some of that revolves directly around the client care and the educational components. Being practicum students, our counselor trainees aren't as experienced as people working in agencies. So when we get some individuals coming into the center, clients in the center that are maybe a severe axis 1 or maybe a wide variety of different axis 2 disorders, then we're looking at referring them out, looking at getting them better care outside of the center. Whereas in an agency, obviously, you'd be able to keep those if it's the clientele that you normally see. So I'm looking at in terms of education, keeping the clients, trying to get a wide variety of clients so that our students will have a good experience and be able to understand what mental health counseling is all about. But at the same time, with those clients that come in with severe needs, even though I would like to keep them and mm-hmm. kind of show them to the students and let the students get some experience with that, I'm looking at client care and saying, hey, this person with borderline personality disorder really needs to be able to develop a relationship long-term with a counselor outside of the training facility.
I'm going to ask you just more concrete things about numbers and maybe give our listeners an idea first about the facility you work with, sort of the rooms, the operating hours, and, and how that is in a university clinic.
Well, with our clinic, I think there's some university clinics that are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But with our clinic, we're one of three mental health providers here on campus. And we have, I think, 9 or 10 rooms in the center. Some are used as classrooms sometimes. We have roughly around 10 rooms. We see roughly around 1,000 clients a year. Right now, about 80-85% of those are students here at the university. But we also see people, families, from the community for the marriage and family practicum. We see individuals from, pretty much all walks of life. Anyone who really needs counseling, I'm committed to, assessing them and helping them find the best, counselor that they need, whether it's with us or elsewhere. So we're really open to anyone, the public and the students.
And what are your operating hours?
Right now we're open about, I'd have to look, but I think we're open roughly around 55 hours a week. It's Monday through Saturday. Monday through Wednesday, we're usually 9 in the morning to 9 at night. Thursday, 9 to 5. Friday, 9 to 2. And then Saturday, we're open from like 9 to 1. And most of, being that we serve so many students, we get quite a few students at those night hours on Monday through Wednesday. It starts picking up around 3 or 4 o'clock, and then by 8 o'clock we may be, there's many, many times throughout the semester that all of our rooms are filled and there's still people wanting in.
So are there fees for service?
Students, faculty, and staff here at the university are free. And it's a sliding scale for community, and it's a generous sliding scale. I think the most we'll charge is $25, and it's based on income. But even with that, with people from the community, if they can't pay, then we usually work out something.
Yeah, I know looking at some of the things that I've seen about university counseling centers, the idea of fees is something that some centers struggle with in terms of to provide fees or to not provide fees, and I guess you've come to some conclusion or some decision about that.
Well, it's it would be nice if we charged because then we'd have more money to play with. But at the same time, being that we are one of three mental health providers here on campus, one of them does charge. I think $24 for a 1 hour session now. And I know, personally, just from talking to different students, that that's kept a lot of students from going. So we're able to work it out. We're supported, the center here is supported financially through the department, through the counseling department. So, it's kind of all one big pile of money for the department. So we don't really have a big overhead. We don't have a lot of expenses outside of my salary and the secretary's salary and some teaching fellows. There's not really a lot of expenses each year. So it doesn't really hurt us not to charge. And since we are free, we have, like I say, I mean, as many as 1,200 clients in 1 year.
Yeah, that's great. So the funding does come through the department, allocated through the College of Education, that supports primarily your full-time staff person and your salary. And then you say you have teaching fellows. Can you talk a little bit more about how the center's staffed?
Yeah, the center's staffed. We usually have anywhere from 3 to 5 doctoral teaching fellows. They're doctoral students in the counseling department here. And teaching fellow, they're called teaching fellows here at camp, but it's basically the same as a graduate assistantship. They work 20 hours a week in the center and do everything from making labels and completing files and clerical work all the way down to some, individual informal supervision for some of the practicum students when they have questions and they need answers. They also work with each of the practicum classes as a liaison, and they keep the practicum classes informed about what's going on in the center, what forms have changed, where, you know, this week we're having a problem, nobody's turning in this form, etc. And just kind of, they help me to dot the I's and cross the T's.
Okay, so it's a good support team for
you. Oh yeah, very much.
So who provides the client service then?
Client service is provided by practicum students in the master's program and the doctoral program here at Kent. So here at Kent, we have our practicum is divided into two semesters. It's a two-semester practicum, 20 hours each semester to meet the KCRUP required 40 hours. And we call it Prac 1 and Prac 2. And at any time, we usually have, well, in the fall and spring semesters, we usually have around 50 practicum students each semester between Prac 1 and Prac 2. And they provide the services, and like I say, they're helped from us, from the staff, etc. Occasionally, we'll have staff members doing an intake if there's no practicum student available. But for the most part, we have plenty of practicum students.
And the clients then that are selected for these practicum, who makes the client selections in terms of assigning clients to practicum students and or
I do that. I go through every intake that comes in, I read through it, and then I decide whether or not it's appropriate for a Prac 1, a beginning practicum student, or a Prac 2, who's a little bit more advanced, or even the advanced individual practicum students, who are usually the doctoral students, or marriage and family practicum, if we have it. So it's just a matter of reading through it and deciding what level, because we do have people coming in with relationship issues that are very, very basic, and then we are study skills issues, and then we have people come in who have been severely depressed and have a history of depression for the past 10 years. And making those decisions, it's actually usually pretty clear when you look at a case.
So you get a sense of the counselors, the counselor trainees that you have working here and sort of their skill level.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that, you can get an idea of where these cases might best fit.
Certainly, certainly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Who provides the supervision? How does that work?
The supervision is it's provided one of two ways. Here in the, since Kent does have a doctoral program, one of the classes in the doctoral program is the supervision of counseling. And in that supervision class, one of the requirements is that they supervise a student throughout the semester, and it's a master's student in practicum. And they do supervision notes, they tape the supervision, etc., so it's all on the up and up. So when the supervision class makes in the semesters that it actually runs, the majority of the supervision is provided by the doctoral students, who are then supervised by the practicum student's instructor for their 1 hour of supervision. On the semesters that the supervision class doesn't make, then the student's instructor actually provides supervision. And the instructors are usually adjunct instructors, clinical counselors from the field here in Kent and the surrounding area.
Okay, so the possibility is that a client who's seeing a counselor trainee, that trainee could be getting supervision directly from their practicum instructors,
mm-hmm.
or directly from their practicum instructors, and also the possibility of having doctoral students who are studying supervision
exactly.
at the time doing the supervision with them too.
Exactly. Regardless of whether or not the supervision class makes, there's always the classroom instruction for 2.5 hours a week of the group supervision from the practicum instructors.
So the students, the counselor trainees who are prac students who work in the clinic, then also receive group supervision in the classroom, but they also, again, as you say, receive the individual supervision
mm-hmm.
either from the practicum instructor
mm-hmm.
or from doctoral students working with the practicum instructor.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay. All right.
So we have a lot of supervision going on, actually.
Being a training clinic, what special circumstances that you're aware of separate you from public or private clinics?
I think a training clinic, I think the biggest thing is maybe what I'd mentioned before with the limitations in trying to balance the two and making sure that the counselor trainees that we have are able to meet the needs of the clientele, And then also, well, I guess, yeah, it's probably mostly that, making sure that you're able to meet it, but also communicating with the counselor trainees, because some of them are, as a lot of students, a little gung-ho, and they're like, I can handle this case, or I can do that. But it's really about focusing and assessing their abilities. Whereas, maybe if you're working in an agency and you have all licensed counselors working for you, I think there's probably some assumption that all of the counselors can handle at least a certain degree of severity in their clientele.
Well, I think the support there is that after so many years of experience, mm-hmm. which you would find people working in public agencies, licensed working in public agencies, the, you know, 5 or more years experience working in that agency, their competence and their confidence level.
Mm-hmm.
Not only the competence, but the confidence level
exactly.
is kind of meets their competence.
Exactly.
Whereas a new trainee might have a lot of confidence, but not have a lot of competence yet.
Yeah. And those are usually the ones that are, that kind of bother me the most when they come in very, very confident and their abilities just aren't there. And it's okay. It's just that they need to realize exactly where their limits are and be able to grow from there.
Is it easier to work with a student whose skill level is there and maybe their confidence isn't there yet?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think so. Because convincing someone that they're not able to do something when they think they can, it's okay if you're talking about riding a bike, but if you're talking about working with someone who really needs help, then it can get a little, say, dangerous, but it's a lot of issues to think about.
I think of other things that you have to wrestle with in terms of semester breaks and the fact that you're every 2 semesters maybe swapping out, or every semester swapping out maybe 20 counselors.
Yeah. And that's the biggest issue. And I've seen some things on CessNet with different directors talking about that. It's, I think that's, it's an ongoing issue that we haven't been able to find an easy answer to that yet. We do have a plan. We do have, I guess, policy, if you will, of what we do. At the end of each semester, we provide the people, explain to them about the break. We'll have here at Kent 5 or 6 weeks sometimes, explain to them about the break, how we won't be providing counseling. We give them options for places in the community they can go. We even help them to set up the appointments if they want. So we really go, I wouldn't say the extra mile, we just do our job in making sure that the continuity of care is there throughout those breaks. And then we also let them know that, hey, at the end of the break, if you set up this relationship with a counselor down the road in an agency, you can continue there. You don't have to come back to us. So that they can actually have some continuity of care with the same counselor, building a relationship. And that kind of goes back to dealing with the academics and clientele. If we have someone who comes in and maybe it's severe trauma that they've suffered all their life, and they really need to build up some type of trusting relationship, it looks like that they would probably need therapy for a year, 2 years, maybe ongoing for a long time, we really kind of focus on referring them out from the very beginning, because it's not really fair. It's not just good. It's not good practice, in my opinion, to have someone and say, okay, you're going to meet with this student for 15 weeks, get to know them, get to trust them, and then after a 5-week break, you're going to meet with someone else and get to know them and tell them everything again. It's not good for someone who's, you know, a victim of childhood sexual abuse and hasn't trusted anyone in their entire lives. So, you know, we try to assess those clients as they come in.
How does the videotaping with the training work out? Counselor trainees feel about it, and how do clients feel about it?
I think counselor trainees are comfortable. I haven't had a counselor trainee complain about being on videotape. And for the most part, our clients are okay with it. You know, they're a little, once you explain it to them and tell them exactly what's going to happen on the videotape, what it's going to be used for, we're very upfront with them, saying the videotape is for supervision purposes, to ensure client care, to make sure that, you know, the counselors who are in training are doing their job and doing everything correctly. We also let them know that by the end of the semester, at the latest at the end of the semester, the videotape is completely erased. We let them know who's going to see the videotape, et cetera. So once we explain those things, surprisingly, I think, for me anyway, it's a little surprising. I'd say probably 99% of the people are okay with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a matter of fact, just in the past 2 years, I can only think of two people who really weren't comfortable with a videotape, and it was a parent of a child, and then another person who was been brought to us from the courts, and they just weren't really comfortable. But for the most part, everyone's okay with it once you explain it to them.
So holiday breaks in service, you have local backup.
Yeah, local backup. That's the best thing that we can really provide, and it's really it's never comfortable. I never like it at the end of the semester because we know there's going to be a five week break, and you know, what do? We do the best we can.
Has that been problematic in general?
Not problem. Yes and no. It's not problematic in the sense that it causes a problem for us, but I know it's problematic because we'll have the 5 week break. We'll have all the cases to reopen in the spring or in the fall, and this spring we have 60 cases to reopen next week. I'm confident that only about 30 of them will show back up. Even after we call them and set up the appointment, they'll just decide, well, I don't want to go back or whatever. So,
or something changes and the client kind of decides that break in the regular therapy has kind of dissuaded them from coming back and continuing on with the process.
So I think it's problematic for the clients, and I don't have any numbers on that exactly, how many are over their problems or have dealt with their problems, but I know that we lose probably at least half of the clients that we try to carry over from one semester to the other.
Well, I feel like we're focusing on the challenges, although not to say that your position, your role is not challenging, but is there anything that's sort of an enhancement that clients get or that they can experience by coming to a university counseling center?
Well, I think one thing that always stands out is the amount of supervision. We always tell our students that working here in the center is great because you'll never have more supervision than this. But I think it's also good for the clients because the clients will probably never see another counselor that is so closely monitored and supervised. Everything is videotaped. The instructors watch the videotapes. They discuss it. The supervisors that may be the instructor or may not be see it. So this person you're seeing as a counselor could be supervised by as many as two, and if I happen to be monitoring or something, as many as three people sometimes.
I think also the classroom, I mean, from my experience of working in counseling centers, I didn't necessarily have time to sit around with my colleagues and present cases or talk about cases or engage them in a lot of discussion about cases. Whereas the group, it's not just the individual supervision that the student gets, but the group supervision also allows them the opportunity to get other people's perspectives on a particular case. And you don't necessarily have that out in a practicing
room. I mean, really every case here is almost a team approach when you start looking at it from discussion in the groups, from the supervision. You've got a licensed counselor giving you ideas. You've got at least four other class members giving you ideas, talking about it. And I think it's a wonderful way to approach the counseling. So the clients could benefit from that. Also, I mean, we're low cost, we're free. I know there's a lot of, sometimes in some places, the free clinics that provide counseling, sometimes it's may or may not be quality counseling. Sometimes it's very, very good. Sometimes it's you get what you have. But here you have, I feel, very good quality counseling, highly supervised, and it's free for students. It's very, very low cost for community. So,
I'd imagine with new counselors being part of a clinic every semester that you have to be constantly reorienting staff each semester. How do you handle that?
That is, I don't want to say a pain, but it's a difficult, very, very difficult job. Because, I mean, if you're working at an agency and, you have five new counselors, you train them, it's rough for two or three or four weeks, but they finally, learn the ropes and everything's smooth. Well, I have to do that every single semester, as you said. And the staff here helped me to train the counselor trainees, but the first 4 or 5 weeks of every semester is rough because there's people who don't know about this form and they forgot about that form and calling this person to different procedures. And students will be students. If you have 50 students, I don't care what university you're at, you're going to have two or three who are just kind of there.
It's just not clicking.
They may not be as interested, or they may have other things going on in their lives that are legitimately more important than school. So it's a challenge every single semester to do that. And it never gets easier, because you're still dealing with people who don't know anything about counseling that are walking through the door.
Yeah. I also think that there's probably something unique about working with counselor trainees and then the particular client problems that you deal with. Are there unique issues that you see sort of in this center?
In terms of what clients present with?
Yeah.
Suicide has been on the rise, I think, around the country, but we've been having to deal with that in the center. Clients coming in, I've been doing some basic research from the intakes that we have. Since January, 34% of our clients have presented with depression, which is about right. I would expect that. But 11% have reported previous suicide attempts. And I thought that number was kind of high. I haven't done a lot of research on suicide, but I thought 11% was shocking, the previous attempts anyway. But we deal with that, and surprisingly enough, on a college campus with college students, we deal with quite a few Axis 1 and even Axis 2 disorders. Mm-hmm. So I used to work on a college campus in a college counseling center, and it was your basic relationship, study skills, my parents this, you know, my girlfriend that, I don't have enough money, I don't know what to major in. And that was all kind of what I expected. And then when I became director here and I started looking at the clientele, there's more people with serious disorders or serious problems than there are those with the relationship, the going to class.
Sort of adjustment
skills.
Type issues.
Yeah.
But they don't come in and they say, hey, I've got an Axis 1 diagnosis. I mean, what kind of things do they present with, and then what kind of things do you find are underlying?
Well, some of them just, they'll present with, a lack of motivation, or just, I don't know what to do with life. And then after talking to them, sometimes for 5 minutes, sometimes for a couple of sessions, you realize, hey, this person's been this way on and off for the past 10 years, the past 15 years. You start talking to them about their history, and they start describing their history and their family history. Substance abuse is just amazing in terms of family histories. Mm-hmm. I forgot the percentage, but so many report, once you start getting family histories, about parents with substance abuse issues. Schizophrenia, for some reason, pops up in family histories a lot more than it should, really. So they present with just those basic, that they may come in with those very basic concerns or those basic issues, but then really for some reason here it takes maybe within one session or two sessions, it's full-blown, depression, yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. Are there unique issues for training counselors in a counseling setting that you run into? Things that you might not experience in an agency setting?
In terms of the training, in terms of the issues with the students themselves, trying to find a way to support them in doing maybe what they want to do or going in the directions that they want to go with the clients, but also having to pull back on the reins a little bit and say, okay, I know you like Gestalt, but you're not really trained enough to be able to go on all these different approaches and do these different techniques. I know you like existentialism, but really,
the client's looking for an answer.
Yeah,
here.
The client's looking for an answer. And you need to be able to provide some type of concrete guidance, I guess you could say. Also, I think with today's world being so driven by HMOs and insurance companies, students who are really, I'm a pure existentialist for the most part, so I really like existentialism, but I also know in an agency, when an insurance company is going to pay you for 7 visits, existentialism,
searching your soul is not going to be a...
Exactly. Finding out the reason why I'm here isn't really going to do the job. So working with students and really helping them to explore those areas that they're interested in, but also saying, hey, look, in the real world, you're really going to need to have some cognitive behavioral, some reality, some concrete things that you can make some progress and demonstrate some progress in 7 or 10 sessions rather than searching your soul.
Yeah, I guess that was sort of my question, that the unique training issues that kind of separate a counseling center in a university, which is very much, is real world, but from the agency sort of setting that you describe as in the real world.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things, that differences that come up for you?
The primary differences that come up, I think, really lie with the abilities of the counselors, and kind of going back to what we're talking about with their confidence levels, the things that come up in agencies. We actually have, in terms of the clientele that we see, our counseling center actually operates more like an agency than I think probably a lot of counseling centers. Actually, a couple of counseling centers I know of that operate more like a college counseling center, and this is much more like an agency in terms of the clientele that we serve and what we do. It's just that I think our limitations are much greater. Our responsibilities are maybe not greater, but they're stretched out across a whole variety of people. If something goes wrong in the center, it's not just one counselor doing something wrong and maybe the direct supervisor or the agency director, being responsible. It's if a student does something wrong, then it's the supervisor, the instructor, the director, faculty members. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more things to take into consideration that I think a lot of people who go into the job of being director or running centers like this don't really think about it. I mean, they think about it, but they don't. It's not really right there with them all the time. And over the past couple of years, I've learned that I've got to just stay on top of everything, constantly. Everything that when I assign a client to a student, and I'm not sure if that student can really handle it, but I think they can. Even though they have an instructor and stuff, I still have to go back and stay on top of it and say, hey, are they doing the right job? Because if they're not, a lot of stuff can happen. A lot of problems can occur. And just staying on top of all 40 or 50 people all semester long. It's difficult, but it's fun at the same time.
Do you have to, a lot of counseling centers have to deal with dual relationships. And I was just wondering if you wind up being a university where you have students who are counseling students, if you're running into dual relationship issues more often, or those kinds of dual relationships?
Occasionally we will. Lucky for us, I think most of our counseling students are, they come in the evenings, they have full-time jobs and stuff, so they're not really living on campus, being a part of the campus community, so they don't know a lot of the students who come in. But occasionally we will have people come in, and if there is a possibility for a dual relationship, we kind of analyze it. But we have so many counselors, we can put the
person. It's easy to kind of switch them around.
I mean, we have 50 counselors to choose from, so we can switch them around. And then at times when we serve faculty or staff here at the university, we usually give those to the doctoral level advanced individual counselors, so that they can maybe have, not that they have more discretion, but they have a little bit more experience. They may understand a little bit more clearly how important it is to keep this, keep tabs on everything that's done and said.
From looking at the concerns of counseling centers, not just university counseling centers, but university counseling centers in general, or counseling centers in general, HIPAA, and have you had any special things that you had to put into place in terms of HIPAA or concerns?
Luckily, we don't have, there are some concerns that have really been coming up for me in the past year, but for the most part, HIPAA really pays attention closely to electronic transfers of client information. And since we don't accept third-party payments, we don't have to transfer information electronically to insurance companies. We don't have anything like that. So the people who do pay us pay by cash or check. So really, we're extremely limited on what we need to do in terms of HIPAA. However, I do think we probably need to move more closely into being in line with HIPAA, just as a good model, as a
for
good
the
training
students, yeah.
for the students, and even for just peace of mind, knowing that, you know, even though this isn't absolutely required of us, it's nice to know that we're meeting the mark anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's just a good thing in general to move as closely as possible to the guidelines that HIPAA sets forth. But we're not really bound to it. And there's been some talk by different people saying that, well, if you're in an education setting, you don't really have to. And I think there's some arguments on both sides of that. But, you know, we're going to move to it eventually.
Yeah. I would just want to let listeners know that at counselaraudiosource.net, you can find show notes from this particular broadcast, and on the show notes we have some references and also the link to the web link to the site, the center site on the web, but references about university counseling centers and articles about university counseling centers that the listeners to this broadcast might find helpful. Is there anything else you'd like to say in conclusion?
I think that's about it. That's a pretty good description, I think, of my job and of the center. It's challenging, but it never stops. I found the biggest, not surprise, well, kind of a surprise, the biggest challenge I've had, well, maybe not the biggest, but a challenge indeed, is it constantly having to change and tweak things every single semester. And I'm the type of person, I've always been used to, you know, putting together a class, and it's a very good class, and you may change a book, or you may change something on your syllabus occasionally. But with this, every single semester, I have to go through the entire procedures manual, policies, and stuff like that.
My guess is you find a student, an instructor, or a client that makes you make that little shift.
Every single semester. Every semester. It never stops.
Okay.
Stops.
Well, thanks for talking with us today and for the folks here at Counselor Audio Source.
Well, thanks a lot.
You've just heard an interview of Dr. Jason L. Miller regarding his work as the Counseling Center Director for the Counseling and Human Development Center at Kent State University. This interview was done by Dr. Marty Gentius of Kent State on January 11th, 2006. Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselaraudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4015. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.